The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from NPR.org. The ADA was a victory for persons with disabilities, but more is needed. From WBSC.org, the first WBSC Blind Baseball International Cup is being held in Holland. From paycomonline.net, Benetech has a job post. From Cool Blind Tech, the University of Maine VEMI Lab takes third place in USDOT Inclusive Design Challenge. From the NNO, where to get free COVID tests in Wake County. From Newsweek, a blind dog has a guide cat. So let's get started. From NPR.org, the ADA was a victory for the disabled community, but we need more. My life shows why. By Shruti Rajkumar, R-A-J-K-U-M-A-R, posted July 29th. Growing up, I always used crutches to get around and only would use a wheelchair for school field trips or vacations that involved long-distance walking. Ableism and issues of inaccessibility are part of the reason why. In the moments when I did use a wheelchair, I noticed that I was restricted in terms of where I could go. I remember facing barriers in accessing some shops and restaurants, especially in older buildings. These concerns took on added significance after an upsetting visit to a Washington, D.C. bar in early July, where I was told to leave my wheelchair outside. My friends had already carried my wheelchair down to the first floor entrance. I could otherwise physically enter the establishment on my crutches, but we were told that we could only come in through the accessible street entrance on the second floor. The business eventually let us in through the front entrance, but when my friends carried my wheelchair upstairs to the dance floor on the third floor, we were once again told that the chair wasn't allowed in that area, and that we'd have to keep it on the second floor. This entire experience left me reflecting on the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, a civil rights law that prohibits discrimination based on disability in all aspects of public life. The incident, which received a lot of attention and media coverage, left me frustrated and questioning how something like this could have happened with the ADA in place. My experience at the bar is not unique in the disabled community, which shows that while the ADA is an important foundation for our rights and shouldn't be taken for granted, it is just the baseline. We need more protections and policies to prevent such issues and to further disability rights. It has been 32 years this week since the law was passed, and activists and experts believe more protections and policies are needed to prevent such issues and to move the disability rights movement forward. Joining the disability rights movement was a pure necessity for this activist. When she was in college at Long Island University, Judy Heumann, H-E-U-M-A-N-N, remembered having conversations with other disabled students about significant movements that were happening at the time, including the women's rights and civil rights movements, but they didn't see much of a disability movement happening. Heumann began learning from other activists as a participant in anti-war protests, as well as from organizing protests and activism with other disabled students at her college. We were no movement, but we were talking about how there are a lot of us, and there are all these issues that need to be dealt with. These other groups are not representing at all. They're not really seeking us to be involved, whatever the group was. And we need to be looking at creating something that brings us together and where we can be addressing these multitude of issues, Heumann told NPR in a Zoom interview. Heumann would go on to become one of the leaders of the disability rights movement, which led to the societal shifts that often are taken for granted today. David Capozzi, C-A-P-O-Z-Z-I, who served as the executive director of the U.S. Access Board and oversaw the development of the ADA's accessibility guidelines, said the law's biggest successes have been in public transportation. Prior to the passage of the ADA, 65% of the buses in the U.S. were accessible. According to a 2020 survey by the Federal Transit Administration, more than 97% of buses are ADA accessible. You could go to any corner of any city across America, wait for a bus, and you know that that bus is going to have either a lift or a low floor and a ramp. And there's not many countries that can say that. So I think that's a big success, said Capozzi to NPR in a Zoom interview. But there are still frustrating gaps, Capozzi said, noting that Amtrak has only made a quarter of its stations accessible in the decades since the law passed. Similarly, less than a quarter of subway stations in New York City are accessible to those with physical or mobility disabilities. More education around disability rights is needed. Capozzi noted that there are no ADA police, so complaints of inaccessibility and ADA violations have to be filed with agencies such as the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the Department of Justice. This accountability mechanism is one of the limitations of the ADA that often gets brought up by the disability community, says Sandy Ho, the director of the Disability Inclusion Fund at Borealis Philanthropy. It is still the burden, the expectation, and the responsibility of disabled people, people in the disability community, to bring up the ADA and accommodations that are not meeting basic requirements, Ho told NPR in a Zoom interview. Ho noted that there aren't education standards around the ADA in the way other civil rights movements of the U.S.'s history are taught. Human said that most disabled people don't know about the ADA, and there needs to be more funding put into training to teach both disabled and non-disabled people about these laws, what entities are covered by them, and how to advocate around the laws. Because of the lack of knowledge about the ADA, misconceptions arise. For example, Capozzi noted that many believe there is a grandfather clause in the ADA that states that establishments built before 1990 aren't covered by the law. There's just a lesser standard for existing buildings. You have to make your building accessible to the extent that it's readily achievable to do so, which means cheap and easy. But there is no grandfather clause, Capozzi said. Disability experts advise against amending the ADA, but want to see disability rights advancing. Capozzi believes that reviewing the ADA's regulations periodically is good from a public policy stance, but is more guarded about the idea of amending the legislation itself. It's always a risk to open an existing piece of legislation because you may not like what the end result is, Capozzi said. You really need to weigh the pros and cons based on what the politics are. Do you have friends and enemies in the House and the Senate? Do you think that you can get an improvement? Or if you open it up, do you risk losing something? The threats to disability rights and the ADA are very much present. In 2018, the House of Representatives voted to gut the Americans with Disabilities Act by passing H.R. 620, the ADA Education and Reform Act, which would hamper the enforcement of the law. 43 senators voiced opposition to the bill, and it has not been enacted. Disability advocates expressed opposition to the bill, pointing out that it would remove incentives for businesses to comply with the law and place excessive burdens on individuals with disabilities. Human says that now is not the time to amend the ADA, and that efforts should be directed toward other areas for furthering disability rights, such as home and community-based services. She also emphasized the importance of making sure that there are appropriate staffing levels at agencies that handle ADA complaints, and that disabled people and their family members understand their rights. When one is armed with knowledge, I think we can, in some cases, address issues before they escalate. And in other cases, maybe not, she said. If we are able to have millions of disabled people understand what their rights are, that to me is very important. The impact of the ADA on American society cannot be understated. Ho, who was in kindergarten when the law was passed, only learned of its impact later on in life once she began identifying politically and socially as disabled. As a disabled woman and a wheelchair user, the law protected her and gave her access and equal protection to opportunities she otherwise might not have, including access to transportation, public education, and employment, she said. The ADA is something that has really kind of been the context and the very background of my life, rather than something that I consider at the forefront of my life and the work that I do, Ho said. While the ADA is the bare minimum, Host says that it has not extended to every member of the disability community. She emphasizes the importance of prioritizing those who are closest to injustice and who have been historically marginalized when fighting for civil rights. Black disabled women, trans and queer folks who are not put in positions of power, but who society is most likely to consider to be disposable, they should be leading this conversation on how and in what ways the ADA should be expanded, Ho said. Human says that the disability movement has come a long way in the last 50 or 60 years, especially in terms of appropriate representation of disabled people in the movement. She's proud of the ongoing work that the ADA generation, a term for people born after the law's passage in 1990, across the U.S. and globally, are doing to organize against threats to civil rights. The threats are alive and well in so many ways. The ADA and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and all these other laws are so important to enable us to be able to live a life like we fantasize under this vision of what it means to live in the United States and what our rights theoretically are. Human said. Celebrating the ADA is really looking at how our movement has grown. I think we've come a long way in the last 50, 60 years, but we still have so much more to do. The author says, my experience at the bar is just one example of how much more needs to be done for the disabled community. Navigating society is still difficult for me as a disabled person. Following my experience at the DC bar, its manager of diversity, equity, and inclusion reached out to me to discuss what happened and to apologize. In our meeting, he laid out action items he planned to take to ensure that such an occurrence doesn't happen to disabled patrons in the future, which included revisiting bar policies and making sure they're enforced with retraining for all staff. While I appreciated the apology and dedication to do better, I remember feeling very indifferent to the bar's response and having a "I'll believe it when I see it" mindset to their statement of dedication to accessibility. The incident at the bar still happened, and it's largely because accessibility and inclusivity for disabled people are often treated as an afterthought. In my experience, attempts to do better were only initiated after such incidents occur, and disabled people made noise about it. The burden shouldn't fall on us to constantly fight against violations of our civil rights. In an ideal world, the ADA would be enforced more, and owners of bars and restaurants would prioritize access to all. I wish I was able to access every place in society with ease, but that isn't the reality for myself and so many others. I'm immensely grateful to be a part of the ADA generation and will never take for granted how hard disability activists fought for the civil rights protections that I benefit from every day. But at the same time, I want more for myself and my community, whether it be through expanding or modernizing existing laws or bringing forward new policies to advance our rights and access. The ADA deserves to be celebrated, but it can't be seen as the final destination for disability rights. We deserve more. From WBSC, the World Baseball Softball Confederation. First WBSC Blind Baseball International Cup to be held on August 20th through 21st in Beek, Netherlands. That's B-E-E-K, probably pronounced Beck. It will be the first ever blind baseball event sanctioned by the WBSC. The city of Beek, not far from Maastricht in the southeast of the Netherlands, will host the inaugural WBSC Blind Baseball International Cup from 20 to 21 August. It will be the first ever blind baseball event sanctioned by the WBSC. Six national teams will participate in the event. Group A, Netherlands, Germany, USA. Group B, France, Italy, Great Britain. The top two finishers in each group will advance to the semifinals, and the winners will play for the title. Blind baseball is a mixed-gender discipline. The late Alfredo Meli, M-E-L-I, a former Italian baseball national team player, launched his version of the discipline in 1994. Each team comprises five blind players, one sighted player, and four or five sighted assistants. The Italian Blind Baseball Association, AIBXC, a WBSC associate member, founded an 11-team league in Italy, now run by LIBCI. Italian Blind Baseball League. AIBXC promotes the discipline worldwide. AIBXC, with the support of the WBSC, SC, and the Dutch Federation, KNBSB, started a blind baseball program in Beek in October 2021. The coaches trained by AIBXC held a clinic on the May 7th. Out of 16 participants, 12 showed interest in the discipline and became members of the first Dutch blind baseball team under Cheetahs and SITTARD-Condors baseball club coaches. The AIBXC head of the United States operations, Don Landolfi, L-A-N-D-O-L-P-H-I, held a three-day tryout at Monsignor Scaland High School, New York, for players of the Rockers and the Lions, the two blind baseball teams based in New York City. Coaches Eva Trevisan and Priscilla Brandy helped Landolfi select the eight players representing the U.S. in Beek. International events represent a step toward the WBSC's goal of having the discipline recognized by the International Paralympic Committee. The WBSC kindly invites all the national federations interested in attending this event and or introducing blind baseball to their country or territory to contact the WBSC Paralympic Commission through their WBSC Continental Liaison. Posted in paycomonline.net. About Benetech. Benetech, B-E-N-E-T-E-C-H, is a nonprofit dedicated to reducing social and economic inequity in partnership with the communities that we serve through software for social good. Benetech's initiatives are transforming how students, job seekers, and older adults across the globe learn, read, and work. Benetech believes that access to information is a human right, and no person should encounter barriers to education, literacy, or employment due to differences or disability. People at Benetech believe strongly in its mission, and we work hard to embody our truths each day. There's a hot link to find out what their truths are. Benetech is considered a leader in tech for accessibility, serving those with print disabilities such as visual impairment and dyslexia. Bookshare, Benetech's core product, is the largest global digital library of accessible content. In the U.S., Bookshare is helping achieve education equity and inclusion by making learning content so any student with a print disability needs accessible and available at the same time as their peers. Around the world, we have teams and partners in various countries in Asia, Africa, Europe, Australia, and North America, to whom we provide our platform for accessible digital content, support educators and target users via digital literacy training and other programs, and bring systems to change in the publishing industry by certifying the production of accessible digital content. Attracting candidates from all backgrounds. Our users come from all kinds of communities, and so do we. We hire great people from a wide variety of backgrounds, not just because it is the right thing to do, but because it makes our organization stronger in delivering social impact. We encourage members of traditionally underrepresented communities to apply, including people of color, veterans, LGBTQ plus people, and people with disabilities. The opportunity. Bookshare seeks a customer support specialist to add strength to the customer support team. In this position, you will make a difference in the lives of people who are supported by Benetech's nonprofit mission of using technology for social good to provide accessible content to people with print disabilities. As a technical member of the customer support team, you will serve as first-line support to our Bookshare customers, www.bookshare.org. This includes members, educators, and partnering libraries. You will work and collaborate across the organization to resolve technical issues and continually strive to improve the Bookshare member and educator experience. Key responsibilities. Provide service and support to internal and external customers via phone and email, managing and documenting member interactions using Salesforce. As part of a team, support over 900,000 global Bookshare members with varying technical skill levels with a broad range of technical and membership support requests. Assist educators with account management and technical support requests as they help students access and use Bookshare. Analyze existing accounts, check for errors, anomalies, and otherwise monitor the overall data integrity of membership databases. Support members with desktop, web, and mobile applications that are used to access Bookshare content. Guide members and educators in the use of assistive technology hardware and software to access Bookshare service offerings. Work collaboratively to share insights with internal outreach and training teams, product managers, engineers, and other departments across Benetech. Test new Bookshare software and product releases, planning for impact on members from a support viewpoint. Update and create help documentation that supports members with the use of Bookshare products and features. Qualifications and core competencies. Required. Have a spirit for learning. Adaptable. Able to work independently and collaboratively within the team and across departments. Communicating complex and technical information verbally and in writing to all levels of the organization and to customers. Flexible. Gracefully respond to changes and information updates. Excellent problem-solving and critical thinking skills. You are a proactive part of the solution. Elevated attention to specific and complex details that are presented over the phone and in writing. Demonstrated competence with office software tools such as Microsoft Office, Salesforce, JIRA, Jira, or Slack. Familiarity with and willingness to learn assistive technology, such as screen readers, JAWS, NVDA, and VoiceOver, refreshable braille displays and standalone note takers, Bookshare-specific applications, mobile reading applications, Dolphin Easy Reader, VoiceDream Reader. Preferred, familiarity with CRM platforms to track and manage a high volume of support and membership requests. Can maintain detailed record-keeping and high standards of accuracy and data entry. Able to prioritize deadlines by urgency and importance. Strong interest in mission-driven organizations and the communities we serve, including people with disabilities. Travel obligations, none. Please include your resume along with a cover letter that explains why you want to work with Benetech and why you are a good fit for this position. Posted on Newsweek.com August 3rd, Cat helps blind dog navigate their home by meowing. By Simona Kitanowska, Zenger News. Meet Blaze, the blind dog who has his own guide, Cat. Blaze went blind in 2020, but thankfully his cat sister, Satin, has learned to talk to him and guides him to get around and help adjust to his blindness. Robin Wagner, 28, adopted German Shepherd mix Blaze in 2019, and the first checkup revealed he had vision problems. Vets diagnosed Blaze as blind in one eye and with lens issues in the other that would deteriorate. Guide cat Satin took it all in stride, and after getting used to being stood on by her leggy new roommate, the pair became inseparable. Wagner, a preschool teacher from Burlington, Vermont, said a new creature was all up in her space, and even when he could see, he ran into her a lot. The vets recommended surgery in order to preserve what remained of Blaze's sight and prevent glaucoma, but to no avail. Blaze went fully blind in October 2020, and in December that year, had his right eye removed to stop infection. Wagner added, Blaze going blind caused a huge regression in his social anxiety. He became very anxious and reactive. We had to do a lot of work with trainers to help him gain his confidence back. By this point, both pets were fast friends, but the blindness created more issues between them. Wagner said Satin enjoys rubbing herself against his long legs, much like a cat does against a table or a chair. Once Blaze totally lost vision, though, she was getting stepped on a lot. But then Wagner noticed something incredible. She added, "We noticed a beautiful new change. Both the cat and the dog like to hang out in our bed with us. When Blaze would jump up, Satin would go barreling out of the room before he stomped on her. But over time, we noticed Satin laying in her spot and giving Blaze a nice loud meow. He'd stop himself and walk around her. The effort the little black cat made paid off, and she began to use it when they were getting around the house as well. The little cat learned to use her meows and chirps like a sonar, helping avoid collisions with the 80-pound dog. Wagner said every time he'd be walking towards her, she would meow. She would meow, and he would stop and redirect himself. And it seems like having this friend through such a difficult time was important to Blaze. It appeared to help him feel less isolated. Wagner added, I think Blaze going blind caused Satin and Blaze to become closer. Before going blind, they were more like ships passing in the night. Now they take opportunities to acknowledge each other. While she isn't the most affectionate and cuddliest of cats with us, she for sure tells Blaze she loves him, and it's the most beautiful thing to see. produced in association with SWNS. This story was provided to Newsweek by Zenger News. From the News and Observer, posted August 4th. Where to get free COVID tests in Wake County. Article by Kimberly Cataudella, C-A-T-A-U-D-E-L-L-A. Wake County ended its free drive-through COVID-19 testing on Friday, July 29th, but there are other ways to get tested without charge. You can pick up a free at-home antigen tests at one of six locations in Wake County, order free tests through the U.S. Postal Service, visit another free drive-through site in Wake County, as the discontinuation applies only to county-run sites. Where to get a free at-home test kit in Wake County? Wake County Public Health is offering no-cost at-home antigen tests to the public. Stop by during regular business hours and pick up a maximum of 4 boxes per household, with 5 test kits in each, Wake County's website says. Find the tests at self-service tables at the following locations. Wake County Southern Regional Center, 130 North Judd Parkway Northeast in Fuquay, Verena, 8:30 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. Wake County Northern Regional Center, 350 East Holding Avenue in Wake Forest, 8:30 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. Wake County Eastern Regional Center, 1002 Dogwood Drive in Zebulon, 8:30 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. Wake County Health and Human Services Center at Departure, 5809 Departure Drive in Raleigh, 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wake County Health and Human Services, Swinburne Building, 220 SWINBURNE Street in Raleigh, 8:30 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. Wake County Public Health Center, 10 Sunnybrook Road in Raleigh, 8 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. For more information, visit wakegov.com/testing. Order free at-home COVID testing kits online. You can also request free at-home testing kits online through state and federal programs. From the state, ondemand.labcorp.com/NC. NCDHHS and LabCorp allow you to order at-home testing kits shipped to you at no cost through FedEx Priority Overnight Shipping. Note, if you don't have insurance or your insurance doesn't cover it, you are responsible for the cost of the test, which is at least $119, and billed upon return of the test. From the federal, COVID.gov/tests. Homes across the United States are now able to order a third round of free at-home rapid antigen tests. Other free drive-through COVID testing sites in Wake County. Even though the COVID testing through Wake County ended, there are still drive-through sites. Testing is available throughout Wake County at doctor's offices, clinics, and pharmacies. Drive-through testing is still currently available through state-run sites by Mako Medical, Holdren said. Mako is spelled M-A-K-O, like the shark. The Radius Labs, R-A-D-E-A-S, location in Wake Forest is also operating 6 days a week. All locations and hours can be found on our COVID-19 testing page. Here's where you can find free drive-through testing. Radius Laboratories, 907 Gateway Commons Circle in Wake Forest, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. I ran out of time, but you can go to the NNO.com and search for COVID to find out more. So be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll try to get to the cool blind tech article. I'm sure that you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.